Ms. Utley?
Good morning, Your Honors. Christy Utley on behalf of Appellant Juan Sade. May it please the court. This case was set for a jury trial last year in 2024, and as Your Honors are aware, the district court granted summary judgment in favor of the defendants, finding that Mr. Sade, the appellant, was solely at fault by applying Louisiana Revised Statute 32:81. Your Honors, this simply was not and is not a summary judgment case. At a minimum, this is a comparative fault case where fault should have been assessed and allocated by the jury. As a roadmap, I would like to address the applicability of 32:81, as well as the district court's error in substituting its own judgment for the judgment of the trier of fact. But first, I'd like to start with something, an argument that I think should probably be more in the focus. Maybe it wasn't in the briefs, but I would like to talk about it today. And that is the issue of the misapplication of the notice pleading standard. In its reasons for judgment, the district court acknowledged a genuine issue of material fact likely existed as to appellee Mr. Bullock's failure to stop the truck upon impact with Mr. Sade's motorcycle. However, the court erroneously considered this as a new claim or a new cause of action, which had never been pled before. That is not only factually incorrect, it's also a misapplication of the law governing notice pleading. As Your Honors are aware, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8A provides that notice pleading is required to give defendants fair notice of the claims against them. Federal jurisprudence goes on to expand on that and says that there are liberal discovery rules.
Yeah, you're missing me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Judge Clement is an able Louisiana judge and lawyer, as I used to be, but I'm just not getting there with you how your notice pleading argument is central here. So something I'm missing.
Well, Your Honor, because in the district court's ruling, the judge acknowledged that there was a fact as to whether or not Mr. Bullock stopped or not. However, the judge went on to say that those facts to support that in the negligence or was a new claim, were new facts being pled. That is not correct. I understand that we originally filed in state court, state of Louisiana. It's a fact pleading state. It's very similar, very liberal pleading standard, and you flesh out the rest in discovery.
Right? You got an adverse summary judgment ruling, right?
Correct.
All right, the appeal is from the judgment, not from the reasons. So I'm just not making the connection between the notice pleading and you're having to convince us to flip a summary judgment, but maybe it's just me. But given the clock's ticking, if that's the strongest argument you have today, you can go for it, but
I do want to address it, Your Honor, if you just give me, I think I can get there, I hope.
It's your time. I'm just trying to make the connection between notice pleading and Rule 56, and I've just missed it.
Understand. Well, I just want to say that the facts were pled as to that. In the petition itself, we cited in the record, paragraphs 7 and 8 of the petition, facts were pled that Mr. Sade was dragged on his motorcycle and that Mr. Bullock did not stop. He had to be flagged down. And then also the negligence claim is also supported in paragraph 13. In its reasons, and I understand your position on the reasons, Your Honor, I understand that. But I guess what I'm saying is this issue alone on whether or not Mr. Bullock stopped or not by itself is sufficient. It's reversible error. That is enough to reverse this because summary judgment was not proper. Because if he didn't stop when he should have, and he dragged Mr. Sade, and he injured Mr. Sade, which is what discovery showed, the
but
police
are overarching issues that they're genuine. This is a material fact, right? Is that what you, to get you back to the trial court? Is that where you're trying to get, right?
That is right, Your Honor. That is absolutely right. But I guess the genuine issue, even the court acknowledged that there may be a genuine issue of fact as to that, but that wasn't pled. What I'm saying is it was pled. And it also was fleshed out in discovery. Because in discovery, the police report showed that Mr. Bullock didn't stop until he was flagged down. He made the full wide right turn. Wasn't stopped until the next block. He dragged Mr. Sade. Mr. Sade's written statement also said he was dragged. He was dragged because the truck didn't stop. So all of that came out. It also came out in discovery. where Mr. Sade testified in his deposition that, again, his flag was dragged over 100 feet, and despite the fact he blew his horn.
To the chase, Judge Malazzo was a state court judge before she was a federal district judge.
Yes.
Familiar with 2315.
Yes.
She had plenty of these things before she got on the federal bench. So that's the starting point. So cut through the chase and convince us where she missed it. She's not infallible. That's why we have appeals. But just, we've read this, but we got a motorcycle behind, a truck. Generally speaking, if you hit somebody from behind, you're presumed, you know, to be at fault, et cetera, et cetera. You got an allegation about something hooking on to the motorcycle, and I couldn't never understand exactly how that was fastened. So, just drive through the point.
Understood.
That we should reverse it, you know, because otherwise we're going to be at the end, and at least for me, I'm still not going to understand more than what's in the briefs as to how the motorcyclist who's behind, who rear ends the truck, that you want us to reverse that and what the judge missed.
Well, all cases cited by both sides, there was only one case that was decided on summary judgment. All the other cases, the facts regarding a rear end collision, when there are allocations of fault on
those
the other party.
Don't matter. Let me put it to you this way. Just talk to me about the facts. What are the points you say that they weren't entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law? You might convince me, I don't know about the others, but if you keep telling me about other cases, that's just not helpful to me.
Well, my only
point, I'm starting, it's a rear-end collision.
My only point is that 3218, the rear-end collision, the presumption of liability for rear-end collision does not preclude comparative fault. That's where I'm going with that. So this is a comparative fault case, I believe. I mean, if we could convince the jury, maybe it's not. Maybe we all fault is on bullet. But at minimum, it's a comparative fault. And I think that it is relevant.
That he didn't have a signal, that he didn't signal when he turned. Is that what you're talking about? Today you're talking about he was dragging him. Well, he didn't know he was there. I mean, he ran into the back of the truck that had all these cables that got caught on his motorcycle. So. But how do you bring this?
Well, that is an issue that he wasn't seeing, Your Honor, because Mr. Bullitt was driving. He was an Entergy, out-of-state Entergy contact tractor from Mississippi in a big bucket truck, Entergy bucket truck, had those big mirrors on the side. Why didn't he see Mr. Sade? They were on St. Claude, if you're familiar, St. Claude at formerly Caffin, now Fats Domino, taking a right. In the left lane, the right lane was coned off because of construction. Mr. Bullock's a commercial driver. He has a heightened duty as to his driving standard. It's a heightened duty, which the jury would have heard a jury instruction given to them that he had a heightened duty. The blinker issue is a big issue because Mr. Sade said there was no blinker. He didn't think Mr. Sade did not think Mr. Bullock was going to turn right because there was no blinker.
What difference would it have made if he thought he was going to go straight? He still ran into the back of the truck and got the cables all twisted around his motorcycle.
That goes into the Eastman case, which is kind of a sudden emergency issue on unpredictable movements of a truck, because Mr. Bullock in his written statement said he made a wide right turn, which means he went left and then he went back right again. If he didn't have his blinker on and he did that movement and Mr. Sade was anticipating him not turning right, especially, Mr. Sade's testimony was, I couldn't avoid the accident. It happened too quickly. He made this maneuver, he turned, took a right, and he didn't have his blinker on. Viewing the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Sade, to the appellant, he didn't have his blinker on. Now, Mr. Bullock tries to say, well, I didn't have it on at the red light. Once the light turned green, I activated it, but then he made this turn. So, again, those are through construction zone, not having your blinker on or at all, or either having it on late, which is what 32104 says, you have to activate your blinker within 100 feet of the intersection. All of those go against his heightened duty, and that supports that a heightened duty for a commercial driver could have been breached in this case. Those are facts that would go to the jury. There's also the Petras case. I know, Your Honor, you want to talk about the facts, but the allocation of fault can be, even if you have a rear-end collision and you have someone who didn't activate their blinker, those are competing standards, and all of that can support allocation of comparative fault. So the other issue about the not seeing the motorcycle, Mr. Bullock testified that he didn't see Mr. Sedan on the motorcycle before, during, or after he made that right turn. It's over 100 feet. It's over almost three lanes of traffic if you saw the photograph. It's the right, the left lane, the right lane, and there's actually a bus lane, a wide shoulder. It's almost three lanes. And he had made all the way onto the street that he's turning on. And he never saw Mr. Sedan until he was flagged down. I think they radioed him ahead and said, hey, you're dragging a motorcycle. And he said, I stopped, I looked in my mirror, and I saw him. So he could have seen him in the mirror. That is a fact, I believe, that the district court missed as well. So all of these things were pled: failure to see the bike, failure to stop.
Give me a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What's the summary judgment? What is the quality of the summary judgment evidence that was before Judge Malazzo? Just tick them off for me.
Okay. Well, both Mr. Sedan and Mr. Bullock testified regarding the fact that
I don't want you to tell me what's the matter. Just tick off for me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What, when I get in here, what does the summary judgment record look like so that we can properly assess whether the judge construed that evidence in a manner most favorable to the other side than you? I just want you to rat-a-tat-tat rather than giving me what somebody said. We'll
look
at it.
Your Honor, the judge discounted the issue of the right blinker. We think that's a very strong argument. Either he doesn't have it on at all, or he has it on late. Regardless, if he's making this wide right turn going to the left or the right, I think that is consistent with what Mr. Sedan testified about.
As my grandchildren frequently say to me. What I want you to tell me is, there's the deposition of Mr. A, there's the deposition of Mr. B, there's the deposition of C, there's a picture of X. I want you to check off for me what the quality of the evidence is, not tell me what somebody said, so we know what to look for and to fully appreciate the argument. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Tell me what's there.
Mr. Sedan testified that no right blinker. Mr. Bullock said late right blinker, that's what his testimony was. The issue of, we have not conceded that this was a rear-end collision. I know that, I think for our purposes today, even if 3281 applies, there's still comparative fault evidence to support that. But Mr. Sedan, if you think about it, he testified that the truck didn't have a blinker on. He was making this wide right turn, and he got snared. His bike got snared because there were wires or cord or something protruding from the back of the truck or the side of the truck, and that's what ensnared his bike and dragged him, for 100 feet. That was in Mr. Sedan's testimony. Also, the fact that Mr. Bullock, again, did not see Mr. Sedan. He could have seen him had he looked in his mirror. He did not see him until he was radioed to stop. And when he looked in the mirror and he stopped and he looked in the mirror, he could see him in the mirror. So all of those facts should have gone to the jury, Your Honor, as well as the sudden erratic movements of the vehicle. Those all the facts that support summary judgment. If you do look at the photograph that was in our brief, I think we posted a photograph of it in our brief, you will see that the motorcycle is to the side of the truck upon stop. The vehicles had not been moved at that point. It was on the side and very visible in the mirror as the turn was made. So at no time he was stopped. He didn't stop to stop dragging, I should say, Mr. Sedan. And the fact that he was dragged, according to his medical records especially, the fact that he was dragged is really what injured him. The failure to stop and the dragging, and that was pled, and then that was all the evidence supports that, Your Honor. Do you have any other questions? If not, I think I will reserve my time. Thank you.
Reserve your rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Raymond Lewis on behalf of the appellees, Tyler Bullock and Volt Power LLC and Greenwich Insurance Company. May it please the court. Judge Stewart, I think you hinted upon the same comment I had when I first got this case. which is, I don't understand. This is, I think, a very simple case of a motorcycle rear-ending a vehicle, and that motorcycle is 100% at fault for that accident. And it really kind of brings up two concepts, pretty simple concepts. The first is the second law of physics, which is two objects cannot occupy the same space, which then leads us to the evidentiary presumption of 32:81. In this case, setting the stage, I think, is important because there's been a lot of things said about what happened or who saw what or where. But let's remember that this is a electrical wire line bucket truck that is stopped in what is essentially a one-lane road. It is 12 feet tall by 9 feet wide, and it is stopped, dead stopped at a red light. Not rolling up to a red light, not approaching an intersection. It is dead stopped at a red light. Mr. Sade, on a motorcycle, comes up behind our 12-foot by 9-foot bucket truck and stops his motorcycle as well at the red light. Mr. Sade is about sitting on a motorcycle. He's 4, maybe 5 feet eye level. There's no way he could have missed this bucket truck. But despite that, and we don't know why, but he allowed his vehicle to get close enough to rear end, make contact with, whatever you want to call it. Whatever he did, he tried to occupy the same space at a dead stop as our vehicle. That makes him 100% at fault. And this idea of, well, we could have seen him, that, Your Honor, is not what is the evidence in the record. The evidence in the record, and it's at page 19 and 20 of our brief, in the record it's 516 and 517 and also 614 and 619. But Mr. Bullock says, I did not see him in my mirrors. I checked my mirrors before I saw the green light and went to go. I checked my mirrors. I did not see him in my mirrors. I only saw him after he rear-ended me, became attached to the bucket truck, and somebody flagged me. So he was not visible in his mirrors. And Mr. Sade's testimony at 614 and through 619 is important because what Mr. Sade says is, I came and I stopped right behind the bucket truck. Not to the right, not to the left. I stopped behind the bucket truck, which means he's outside the view of the mirrors. So Mr. Bullock did not see the motorcycle hit him and then drag him 100 feet. I think, Judge Clement, you made a very good point. He didn't know a motorcycle had rear-ended him. This was not a 40-mile-an-hour collision where he would have felt the vibrations. This was not a 20, a 10, a 15, a 5. This was, as per Mr. Sade said at 620 in the record, this was under 3 miles an hour. We have no idea why Mr. Sade did what he did, but the front handlebars of his vehicle tried to occupy the same space as ours. He's presumed at fault. I think it's important that when you ask the question, what's the quality of the evidence? And to her credit, counsel is trying as hard as she can because there is no quality of the evidence in this case. And that's important. Because in order to rebut the presumption under 32:81, Mr. Sade has the burden of proof of showing that he kept his vehicle under control, that he closely observed Mr. Bullock's vehicle, that he followed at a safe distance. There's not a scintilla of evidence that he did any of those things. So he cannot rebut the presumption under 32:81.
Did the district court assess whether Bullock was comparatively at fault?
No, because in this instance, under 32:81, Mr. Sade is presumed 100% at fault. And in that process, he must rebut that presumption.
Because I thought, tell me if I'm misreading this, under Eastman v. State Farm, once a presumption of negligence applies, as you say it here does, quote, a favored motorist, Bullock, can still be assessed with comparative fault if his or her substandard conduct contributed to the cause of the accident.
Well, for starters, Your Honor, in Eastman, which has been sort of miscited, I think, repeatedly, Eastman is a three-vehicle, a chain reaction collision, which does not apply to the facts of this case. This was not a chain reaction collision. And in fact, in Eastman—
What does that have to do with the passage I just read? A favored motorist can still be assessed with comparative fault if their substandard conduct contributed to the cause of the accident.
Correct.
Whether it's two vehicles, three, five.
Correct. And in this particular case, there is no evidence that Mr. Bullock did anything wrong. He was at a red light.
There was some dispute about whether he had activated his turn signal.
Well, and that's a good point, because before the oral argument, this idea of the failure to stop dragging the case, and I can talk about that if there are questions about that. The blinker issue was sort of their get out of jail free card, if you will, on summary judgment. But I think Judge Malazzo was 100% correct in identifying that a plaintiff self-servingly saying, oh, well, they didn't put their blinker on, does not satisfy the passage that you're reading and the concepts that you're reading from Eastman. It doesn't immediately trigger some sort of comparative fault on the part of the lead vehicle.
Even if the blinker wasn't on, that wouldn't have anything to do with a motorcycle not seeing a gigantic truck in the daytime right behind him.
I 100% agree.
In fact, the blinker's not on, be like the windshield wipers. I mean, if the facts are taken as true and the motorcycle is directly behind this big old truck, well, he had his motorcycle, the blinkers on and so forth, does he say in his testimony, I didn't see the blinkers, I thought he was turning or anything else? I didn't read that's the argument counsel was making.
It's very unclear what Mr. Sade says he saw or didn't see. I think fundamentally the other issue to sort of—
his major argument was this business about hooking on to the back of the truck.
Which again was his own action.
Somehow saying, well, yeah, I pulled up there and I got close, but it's because this wire off the back of the truck hooked me, and therefore that transfers the fault into some different dimension there, i.e. liability of the truck for having some faulty off the truck to hook the motorcycle, et cetera. I had difficulty understanding how that got into play because I thought it was a rear-end collision case.
Well, and Your Honor, I think the difficulty with the record in some respects is that it really became an exercise of throwing whatever they could to see what would stick. And in sort of to go back to Eastman too, in this, there's no evidence of Mr. Bullock's negligence. He's at a dead stop at a red light, and whether Mr. Sade ran into the back of him at 1 or 2 miles or whether he got right up next to him and somehow clicked on to something, that's still Mr. Sade's 100% conduct. It's nothing that Mr. Bullock did.
Counsel cite a case, or you cite one, where the 3281 presumption has been rebutted, either in a summary judgment case or otherwise, and what that evidence would have to be.
And so, Your Honor, I think a comment that you made at the start of this oral argument is a good one for this case. And you said when we started talking about, you're like, those cases don't matter. And I think that's true. And I will respond to the cases that are cited in the briefing. But every case has to be judged on its own facts, okay? All of the cases that we're about to talk about, Eastman, Stevenson, Graffa, Petrus, whatever we want to talk about, none of them have the same factual circumstances of a lead vehicle at a stoplight and a following vehicle just moving into that person who's stopped. And that's what happened in this case. So none of the I've searched and I could find no case where we're at a dead stoplight and a vehicle rear ends and here we are trying to figure out if 32:81. I would argue to the court there isn't one because nobody does this.
Well, I don't know that, but it has to be one because the statute's written in terms of, it's not an impossibility. So one would assume that they exist, but probably when that happens, they don't show up in this space, meaning they go to trial, they settle, or whatever, something else. So we can only go based on the reported case.
Well, and Your Honor, I think, too, if your lead vehicle is at a stoplight, unassuming, doing nothing, and a motorcycle or something rear-ends that individual, I don't know that the lawsuit is postured this way, where the following vehicle sues the lead vehicle. which is really the unique factor in this case as well. But again, as we said, I mean, all of the cases are different from the facts that we have here. Again, Eastman is a chain reaction three vehicle collision that was actually more a question of fact about whether there were two collisions or one collision that pushed the other vehicle into the lead vehicle. Stevenson is someone basically stopped him in the middle of the lane of travel, in the middle of a multi-lane road, just stopped. And the traffic that was going at speed rear-ended it. The only case that's similar.
Question, Judge Willard asked you where 3281 is at play and where it is possible for comparative fault to be assessed. I don't remember exactly in her reasons if she talked about it. Is there a requirement under Louisiana law? In other words, since the rebutting the presumption is a possibility, must the district court negate that before triggering the presumption? In other words, must the district court discuss the comparative fault factors or not to dismiss them completely? Or is the absence of that a basis to say, well, maybe there's a fact issue and summary judgment improper? You understand what I'm asking?
I do, Your Honor. I think there's two parts to it. My answer will have two parts. So the first is, I think the absence of the quality of the evidence in this case is why summary judgment was appropriate. So there is no evidence of comparative fault. And I think to get to your direct question is, there is no evidence of the three things that the plaintiff is able to prove to rebut the presumption. The presumption is if you are the following vehicle, you hit the lead vehicle, you're presumed at fault. But as I mentioned before, you can rebut it by showing you kept your vehicle under control, you didn't follow too closely, and that you closely observed the vehicle in front of you, which I think is critical in this case. And the district court said in this particular instance under these specific facts that Mr. Sine did not follow with a correct amount of distance. He didn't closely observe the 12-foot by 9-foot bucket truck that he ran into. So the district court said, look, yes, of course, 32:81 is triggered. Did you give me evidence that you can rebut that presumption? And then they did not. They could not come up with that quality of evidence.
Was there any testimony by the motorcycle driver that he thought the truck was going to go forward instead of turning right because he didn't see a signal? But even so, was he trying to pass him? If the truck went straight and he's trying to pass on the right, that's what motorcycles do.
So Mr. Sade denies that he was trying to pass on the right. We put in the briefing that while there is no direct proof of this, it's the only explanation that really makes sense in this case. It doesn't make sense that he's coming up to a stop. And remember, he's on a motorcycle. So when he's stopped, he's got at least 1 or 2 feet planted. So he's planted to the ground. So he could have shuffled too close with his feet. He could have shuffled backwards, whatever it was. We don't know why he came into contact with the bucket truck. We have, and again, we briefed it. The evidence is not in the record. But I think the only assumption you can make is that, remember, he was trying to follow a friend to a restaurant. The friend made it through the red light. He got stuck at the red light, but he didn't know where the restaurant was. So he lost his GPS. And so he needed to go find the person that he was trying to follow. So what we think is that he tried to shoot the gap. And that's how he got in the position that he was. But again, that's not in the record. It's the only thing that makes sense in this case. It's the only thing that gives us some sort of response to Judge Stewart, a question of, I don't get it. I don't understand. I didn't either. That's the only thing we could figure out. But again, to his credit, Mr. Sade says that that's not the case. Before we leave the blinker issue, though, I do want to point out, I think the only case that's even closely similar is the Jurnett case from the Third Circuit, the State Court of Louisiana. It's the one that we cite. And while Jurnett does not involve a motorcycle and a bucket truck stopped at a red light or a one-lane collision at no speed, what Jurnett tells us is that the question of whether a blinker is on or off is not necessarily determinative of the legal cause of the accident. And I think in Jurnett, basically the individual is sort of speeding down the road and there's a police officer who's doing a U-turn to go back to a house. He missed the address. And so as the police officer turns into the road to do the U-turn, The Journay vehicle doesn't see a blinker, doesn't know what it's doing, so it swerves, it flips, and there's actually some pretty serious injuries in that case. Well, what the court said was that Journay is the following motorist, and I think the quote is very good, and I think it applies here, but in Journay, they say Journay had all the information he needed to avoid this accident, regardless of whether Aubrey, the police officer, signaled a turn. I think you can pluck the name of the parties in Journay and put in the name of the parties here, and it applies 100% equally. Mr. Sade had all the information. I would argue he had more information than Mr. Journay did, because in the Journay case, Mr. Journay is actually going about 25, 40 miles an hour, between 20 and 40 miles an hour. Here, Mr. Sade had even more information. He's at a dead stop with a foot planted on the ground to balance himself, and still, as the light turns green, he makes contact with our vehicle. It doesn't add up.
What's your response to counsel opposite's notice pleading argument?
So, Your Honor, I noticed that as well. I will say that that really only came up in their opposition to our summary judgment. And again, I think that was a reflection of the lack of the quality of the evidence. What they said was that because Mr. Bullock saw Mr. Sade in his rearview mirrors, which again is not the evidence. As we said before, the actual evidence is that he was behind him. He didn't see him in the mirrors. It's the 516th and 517th in the record. And so what they say is that at some point, Mr. Bullock must have known that Mr. Sade was attached to his truck and that Mr. Bullock drug him for 100 feet or yards, whatever they want to say, and that he should have known he was dragging a motorcycle that hit him and he should have stopped. It's a failure to stop late argument, I guess. But the biggest problem there was it only ever came up in the opposition to the summary judgment. It was a complete surprise to us that was even remotely something they argued, because if you look at their petition, pages 19 and 20 in the record, they never plead a negligent stopping or a failure to stop after impact. They never plead that ever. It was never an issue until the opposition. And so the district court was, I think, unquestionably correct to say you can't raise this sort of new claim, one that I would say has zero evidence as well, in your opposition solely to defeat the summary judgment. So she rejected that aspect of it, upheld the applicable pleading requirements in both state and federal court, and said, I'm not going to consider that as creating an issue of fact. And even again, I think there is no support for the claim if the court is even going to entertain that aspect. Again, you look at Mr. Bullock's testimony, and again, I think even the testimony they recognize in oral argument, which is the moment someone flagged him down, he stopped. The moment he knew something was going on, he stopped. Then he was able to look in the rearview mirror and see what was going on. But again, this is an under 3-mile-an-hour accident. He had no idea that there was a motorcycle attached to his vehicle. So I think, Your Honors, we believe that 32:81, the presumption applies. It has not been rebutted. There's no evidence of comparative fault in this case, and that the district court was correct to dismiss this case. Mr. Sade had all the information he needed to avoid the accident, and he just didn't. So we would ask that the district court's judgment is affirmed, and we appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, sir. Butler, you have right of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. What did Mr. Bullock do? He didn't stop. He didn't stop. That is true. And that was completely pled. That was completely all through discovery. We've cited it in our brief. I won't go on about it anymore right here. But also, Mr. Sade said, I blew my horn, and he didn't stop. He still dragged me for 100 feet. So that evidence as well goes to the fact that Mr. Bullock was negligent in not stopping and not seeing also as well. There is no accident reconstructionist. There were no experts. Judge Malazzo did correctly exclude the evidence of the person who came out to investigate for the NOPD. So there's no evidence to say what could have seen, what was seen, what was not seen at the red light from the bike being behind the truck. What we do know though, is that once Mr. Bullock turned on to Fats Domino and was radioed to stop, he stopped, he looked in his mirror, and there was the bike. He was visible in that is a factual issue that is in the record. But there's no evidence at all from an expert's opinion as to the speed of the vehicles, as to what could have been seen behind the truck at all. So what we have are the facts. Judge Willett, you also talked about Eastman, and yes, that is what Eastman says, and actually also goes on to talk about the sudden emergency doctrine and the unpredictable driving, which is what we talked about with no blinker, late blinker, taking this wide right turn, and that being an unpredictable moment.
The emergency.
The fact that there is no blinker and that the truck took a wide right turn. The right side of this coned off.
Stop when your client hit him.
No, Your Honor, it was moving. The green light had come on. There was a red light, the tide had turned green, and they were all proceeding. All the traffic was proceeding. It was coned off to the right.
But what difference does the blinker or no blinker make?
Because it's consistent, Your Honor, with the fact that Mr. Sade, his account of what happened, because he's the only person that saw it. Mr. Bullock didn't see it. He said that he didn't think that the truck was turning right because there was no blinker, and then he's doing this wide right turn, and the snaring actually does make sense if you think about a wide right turn because he's going left and back right. And if you look at the photograph, and I did, it's at page 8 of our brief, but the bike's on the side. That's it resting. The bike is on the side, and the wires are snared there. There are other photographs in the record as well. So that's why I think the blinker does go. It supports Mr. Sade's account of what happened. Also, the Kyle case is actually a pass on the right case. We don't agree that that's what happened, but even if Mr. Sade was trying to pass on the right, the Kyle case took that violation under 3274 after a full trial on the merits, and only 25% fault was placed on the motorcycle in that case. So again, comparative fault applied even in a passing on the right scenario.
Percentage of fault you saying should be assessed to the truck driver to fail to put the blinker on? Is that what you're saying?
And as well as not stopping when the horn was blown and not seeing Mr. Sade on the motorcycle in his big mirrors that are on the side of the truck and dragging him for 100 feet.
Comparatively negligent for not seeing a motorcycle behind his big old truck.
No, Your Honor, he's negligent in dragging the motorcycle 100 feet from angled this way and then taking a right and going all the way with the bike being dragged toward to the side of the truck because the vehicle in front saw the bike to the side of the motorcycle being dragged there for all that distance, and the horn was being blown. So he was negligent in that. I do want to address, if you would allow me, the Jornet case. That case, the Third Circuit case, only summary judgment case that has been cited to you. Everything else, trial and merits, because comparative fault, allocation of fault goes to the jury. In that case, that was not a rear-end collision. The plaintiff lost control of their vehicle, went into a ditch. There was an issue of whether or not there was a blinker from the following vehicle. The preceding vehicle. But also, the plaintiff who sued that went in the ditch was there was evidence that he was intoxicated, he was on drugs, he had his little small children in the vehicle, and he didn't have a driver's license. So under all of those facts, it's no wonder that summary judgment was granted and in that case, but that was not a rear-end case. It is very distinguishable from the facts that we have here. All the other cases are more on point, and they allowed the issue of fault and allocation of fault to go to the jury. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Your argument. Thank you, counsel, the other side. It's always an adventure being pulled back into the civil code. At any event, this concludes the arguments this week for this panel. The argued cases as well as the non-argued cases will be submitted. And with that, this court stands adjourned.